Hey, friends. Right now, for me, when I'm recording this, it is the day before Thanksgiving. So it's Thanksgiving week. The reason why I'm saying that is one, happy Thanksgiving. And two, you might hear the evidence of chaos in the background. But you know what? Roll with it, because my guess and maybe even hope is that your house might be just as chaotic as mine. But hey, happy Thanksgiving. I'm really excited to introduce this podcast. This week on the podcast, my super duper good friend, Melissa Dunn, who's also my ministry partner. You guys know who she is. If you've ever listened to it, I pretty much mention her just about on every episode. She sat me down for part two of a conversation. Now, about a month ago, I sat her down and was like, okay, Melissa, I really want to talk about our voice, voice, V-O-I-C-E. Meaning, as women, we have a voice that's given from God to express from what's happening on the inside of us to the outside. And you and I both know this just is part of our calling, whether we want to have a voice or not, whether we like it or not, whether we're good at it or not, whether we get opportunity to use it or not. It's literally part of our calling because it's how we share Christ. Anyway, long story short, about a month ago, I interviewed her about her voice. You could check that out on her YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and search Melissa Dunn Bible. You're going to see it pop up. Look for the one that talks about an interview about her voice. Well, last week, or maybe a couple days ago, can't remember, Melissa interviewed me about my voice. So what you're going to hear today on the podcast is first about a 3 or 4 minute discussion on voice. Then you're going to hear my origin or my personal history about the development, or maybe even some decisions that I made that stopped the development of my personal voice. And then some pitfalls, some things I did well, some ways that God's been gracious to me about using my voice. Okay, so all that is, for me, it just was a joy. It's cool for me to look back because I'm like, oh my gosh, God really is moving in my life. I forget the long-term pan of what God's done because I get so fixed on the here and now. But here's what's really important today. As you listen to this conversation with Melissa and I'm really, really visual. If I feel like I understand something, I'm going to show it to you. And what I end up doing in this conversation with Melissa is using both of my hands in, and I'll describe what I mean in a moment, in a certain way physically, like my hands are doing something to demonstrate and explain a concept. So let me give you that picture because you'll hear it. Okay, so first of all, literally, I'm taking my two hands and my left hand, I've got really far out to my left side. It's kind of out to my side. And my right hand, I've got really far out to my right. And I obviously, my hands are spread out, one to the left, one to the right. And what this picture shows is the duplicity between, basically, on my left hand, me genuinely moving toward God. So my left hand's going to represent the good things that God's doing and my desire for him, while my right hand represents essentially my baggage, my hiccups. I refer to it frequently as my duplicity. Therefore, these things in this demonstration or explanation that you'll hear about or hear reference to in the conversation is representing how these two things, my heart moving toward God, but really my real life as two separate entities. So I just wanted to clarify that because you'll hear me say these things or this, and that's what I'm referring to, is the separation of these two things. Just wanted to give you that clarity so that maybe, hopefully, the listening is easier. All right, folks, this was a super encouraging conversation from Melissa and I, and we certainly hope the same is true for you. Happy Thanksgiving. You're listening to Women Speaking Truth, a podcast that inspires women to know God deeper and equips them to take the next step in their God-given callings. My name is Andy Bruce, and I'm so passionate about helping women develop their character and understand their callings that I went out and got a doctorate degree in leadership. Now I'm sharing practical tools about leadership development through a biblical lens so that God can empower and ignite ordinary women like you and I to make His impact on our world.
So Andy, let's start with trying to define what we mean by voice. And we may even mean two different things. So you may see us, friends, you may see us sort of working through together to try to figure this out. But let's try to bring some clarity to this idea of voice. Because I'll tell you how I'll say it, and then I want to hear how you would say it, which is going to be different. I already know it's different.
It is.
So I would say, when I think of voice, someone having a voice, what I don't mean, and we clarified this last time, I don't mean somebody who's talented at public speaking or is a writer. And have you heard this, you know, like a writer has a strong writing voice. Mm-hmm. I don't mean that. I mean my own perception of the world with my personality, my gifts, my talents, how God has wired me with the Holy Spirit on the inside of me, how I uniquely see the world and expressing that out. That's what I mean. That's what I mean by voice. It's expression, my own unique internal world expressed outwardly to others.
Okay, so could I tell you, I'm torn. I don't know yet if I mean that every person has a vocal, verbal, word-based voice. I don't know, but I would say for the sake of this conversation, I think we're talking about when you are in Christ, you make an impact and you share and you love through your voice, but maybe through other ways too, Melissa.
The reason that I sort of go back and forth on this, I'm actually with you on being confused. So you're going to see us, we're not quite sure. That's okay. We're not coming being like, and here's all of it. You're watching our thought process happen together right now. This is a part of what we do when we're like trying to explore a topic. We're exploring. I guess when I think of voice, and I don't know where the boundaries are, meaning like, am I talking about a spiritual gifting? And I don't mean like a communicate spiritual gifting. I mean just what God has put me on the earth to do, to show who He is. Is that what we're talking about? Or, you know, I feel torn because when I think of voice, and it's 100% because it's where I'm at as a human, I'm thinking about the 5-year-old Melissa who did not have a voice, who is now learning to have a voice. And I can't decide, are those two different things? Are they the same thing?
As I hear you talk, I feel like maybe you nudged me a little bit toward, I'm talking about the words and the vocal expression, because Melissa, of how many times the Bible talks about our words and how they matter and how we have words of life or words of death.
But wait. So here's the thing. And I'm sorry for those of you who don't track in this direction. You're gonna be like, blah, 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 childhood stuff.
Who cares?
I can kind of like be like, yeah, I sort of see that. But what if that is the truth, which I do believe, our words deeply matter and they have impact on the world. But what happens when that's the reality, but our voice has been completely crushed and we have no idea how to use it? I think I can, if I were to just hear you without knowing you and knowing what you mean, I would think that you're talking about like, just go share the gospel. Like, nope. This is some sort of like evangelistic, use your voice to share the good news. And to me, it's like, no, it's much more complicated than that, because we bring so much history. And I just mean as humans, not as believers. We bring so much history, like literally in our bodies, from what we've experienced as children and as teens and as young adults, where our voice has been ignored or, you know, shut down. And I don't want to ignore that because I've been so impacted by my voice being shut down, that it fully has informed how I use my voice now because of what's happened then.
I've got teenage boys right now. They're young teenage boys. And with all their testosterone and changes in their body, I mean, those little voices are like, and they don't mean it. They don't see it coming, but it doesn't mean they stop speaking. You know what I mean? It means that they've got to work through it and have some courage and learn how to get over the humps that life throws their way, because you're still healing, reconstructing, learning, maturing into this voice that God has given you. And that feels important, because you know, and oh, do I know what it's like to crush or manipulate the voice that God's given us due to outside pain.
Okay, so wait, I think maybe I understand a little bit of where we're going. Let's say that we want to focus on how do we develop the voice that God has given us as believers with the Spirit of God inside of us, but not divorce it from the past.
Bingo. I love it. Can you give me a high five?
So that there is some reflection. And let's start there with your story, Andy. Let's do a little bit of reflection, because I think reflection is helpful. You know, I don't know if I want to say, when is the first time your voice was suppressed? Do you have a time in mind?
Oh, okay. 100%. Okay. Well, I think I definitely grew up in a house where kids were to be seen and not very heard.
That's our generation.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So that was a factor. I did not grow up in a Christian home. I grew up in a very volatile, whack, parents who were doing the best they could, but they had extremely unhealthy homes.
Yeah.
So then at a very early age, 4, sexual abuse began. And specific to my voice, what was told to me was, don't say anything. Well, because I didn't have strong relationship and connection to my parents, there was no way I was going to go and open my mouth and use my voice to communicate what had just happened, because I didn't even feel safe at home. Right. How then could I now feel safe sharing the most shameful thing that in my mind I had just done, which was a 4-year-old's processing. I remember walking home from that first instance where I decided a couple things. And Melissa, these decisions took root and therefore hijacked my voice. The first decision was, I will never tell anybody what just happened. So what happened to my voice? A firm decision to not have an authentic, truthful voice. This has affected my life, by the way, up until the last few years, where out of nowhere, I would just be lying.
Yeah.
You know this deeply, about anything.
Kind of stupid things.
Inconsequential things. Because I think that all goes back to that little decision that 4-year-old baby girl Andy made of, I will never basically tell the truth.
That's right.
Second is, I decided to turn off my emotions. Not on that walk home, but a little bit later. Because I decided I will never use the word feel, because to feel would be to then probably give insight or expose. Somebody might be able to see that I'm not doing well and dig into after. Therefore, that early on, I began to have this very duplicitous life. The real stuff happening to me that I was using strong control tactics, especially for a little baby girl.
Yeah.
Strong so control young. Tactics. Dang. That fully affected my voice and the attributes that go into my voice, like my feelings, like my perceptions, like reality, like truth. Those are all what make up voice. And I had made a firm, it felt like a life and death decision. There's no way that
so
I would
do that. Was it like, hold up your hand here. Was this like sexual abuse and this is your voice and it just suppressed it? That's
oh,
what
for
I
sure.
would feel. Like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, though, because I with my personality, couldn't just suppress it and withdraw.
Oh,
therefore,
that's right.
On this hand, here's where this duplicity comes in.
That's
this was
going
to take center stage, a loud voice to pretend that this wasn't in the picture. A let me be center of attention, because if I could fool you that I am fine, nothing's wrong, I'm happy-go-lucky, then hopefully nobody will ever see reality. Mm-hmm. So Melissa, I mean, from early, formative, important, critical years, duplicity became my coping mechanism.
So,
and it bled into my voice.
So can we talk about, I think we can all get that. Like, it makes so much logical sense of how that played out in your life. Do you have any point in time in either your childhood or your teens where you felt like your voice tried to crop up? And maybe it did work or didn't work. I don't know.
Yeah. So there were a couple instances where I'm not sure it's super important, but one of them that I remember, I've been thinking about this little memory and I think it's adorable. I wish I had a video camera footage of, I was a believer. So I was probably 14.
Okay.
And my parents by this time were believers, and all of that unhealthy family in the moment became radically different. It doesn't mean that there was healing and restoration. We had no idea what we were doing, particularly my parents, but we were functionally operating beautifully. There was such change, but all that stuff still existed. So I remember when I was 14, our youth group would do something called a boot camp.
Okay.
And I mean, it was Melissa Dunn. I mean,
physical boot camp.
Yes.
Spiritual boot camp.
It was a 3-day boot camp before we would go on a missions trip. And my dad, who just walked in, was the head honcho. He was the CO, commander, officer. I don't know what he's called. But this particular time, we were up in Northern California. And there was a church camp up there. Picture 400, 500, 600 kids, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. That's a bunch.
And somebody was going to be chosen from my youth group to talk for 5 minutes in front of those few hundred children, teenagers, peers.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa, for some reason, I was like, I'll do it. And I felt like I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was going to say. I don't have any memory of what I actually said, but here's what I know. I said, like, through the whole thing, to where those people in my youth group affectionately and lovingly tease me. Like, meaning I sounded like a moron. But Melissa, when I opened my voice to talk about God, it was like,
you could feel something like,
oh, I felt something like maybe God's pleasure. Like, I didn't want to stop talking. I didn't know what I was saying, but it felt like something works about this. And I got the smallest taste, and I'm so grateful, because then afterward, as a junior and senior in high school, my youth pastor, whom I had a really good relationship, and he would say, Andy, what's God doing? What's God doing? What's God doing in you? Can you come and at youth group in front of my friends? Can you share that? And so I got early opportunities to open my mouth about God. Now, just as true as the things that I was sharing were, was these still very crazy, unhealthy patterns. So I learned that it was fine and I could get away with talking about what was true of me and God, because it was true. Mm-hmm. But so was all this.
Yeah.
And this became acceptable and a pattern I was comfortable with, because this still did the front and center, big personality, lots of fun, lots of depth, lots of truth, while this was all underground. And I felt like eventually when I was 18 or 19 years old, I was sharing again in a youth environment. And I felt like, God, we've got a good deal going on here. You let me do this and I will do this. But you also let me hide my voice. This works for both of us, so let's not ruin it.
So what was the problem? As you, let's move, because let's move and progress in your story. That continued on for how long? This duplicitous front and center.
I think till I was 35.
So can you...
And I'm only 44, so I want to just be real clear about that, Melissa.
In the last decade.
Yes. And that's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
So the game changer was I was still doing this little number, using my voice, and also hiding the truth. Not, let me be clear about this. I don't mean hiding as far as manipulation. I'd never seen modeled in real life that this can come out and slowly merge, and that these things are fully acceptable and beautiful. I'd never seen anybody that I remember. It didn't seem possible. I'd never seen it. There was not a model. I didn't know what I was doing. And this is all I knew to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean manipulation. I don't mean hiding or hypocrisy, because this was me living as real as I knew how to live at the time. But when you and I started leading a group at our local church of essentially women in their 20s, 30s, who, it was a wild group of women who just loved God together.
It was so fun.
It was so much fun. And we were the primary teachers of this group of, I don't know, 50, 60 women. And eventually, as it became true that I just wanted Jesus, and this really began to shift, because I think previous, I wanted Jesus conveniently and with this deal in mind, that I don't get, we're not going to go there, God, was sort of my MO. But I remember these couple specific years where it was like, I want you no matter what, like I'm in, and no matter what it costs. And at that time, I remember you, Melissa, began to specifically call out my character. Well, that was inconvenient, because this then was being recognized, like all the hidden nature, pride that fueled the ability to be duplicitous, of some sexual inappropriateness on my end that was definitely all the way from being a four-year-old girl who had whack done to her.
And by that, she means like silly stuff said from a stage. Like crude jokes, meaning like kind of like a 11-year-old little boy would crack those jokes. That's what she means. She wasn't like hurting anyone. It was with her words.
No, not hurting anybody. Yeah. Looking at content that was inappropriate and sinful.
Online, yeah.
Uh-huh. Because this is what this, suddenly as the Holy Spirit began to expose elements of what I had done a lot to hide, that stuff began to need an outlet. And I'm so grateful. It was the grace of God, because these things got to rise to the occasion and be pointed out, be recognized, no longer be underground and invisible. They were suddenly visible. Mm-hmm. So as I did the work, and I mean, Melissa, the work, Holy Toledo, on the inside with you, with our community, with other leaders, with people who led us, of honesty, finally having the courage to be honest, finally having the courage to say, I need help, I don't got this, finally having the courage to bring to Jesus this stuff, that the deal was that having this out of the discussion between God and I was no longer wanted by me. And so as this stuff became apparent, I was still teaching, but boy, did this stuff create confusion. Particularly, I think the enemy could really have a field day, and he did with me, of like, this invalidates your voice. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Melissa? He's not wrong. Now, I think God was real, real, real sweet to all of us, because I chose with, especially I think how I'm wired, I put it all out there, and that's not always a healthy thing. I put it out there in order to distance you from me so that you won't see the real thing. But the benefit of this was, as these things, sin, those things we just described, were surfacing, I was vocalizing these things. They weren't hidden. Therefore, I asked Dave, Uncle Dave, we kind of call him jokingly, like, this is true. Doesn't this invalidate my teaching and leading? And he's like, Andy, you're going to people. You're moving to God. You're seeking repentance. Nobody's having to find this out. Yeah. You're not caught. And I never was. Instead, I was like, help. I need, here's where I'm at. And I need people to support. And I think that's why I was able to do the healing for me personally. I wouldn't prescribe this. I'm just describing my own story. That as this stuff became surfaced and exposed and in the light, and I was teaching and using my voice at the same time, I get this is inappropriate for some people, but my leaders, you, our team, they were like, keep going. Yeah. We sense God in it, and God's, we're okay with that.
So can I see your hands? So I would see this just slightly different. So I would see there was this like really big personality, right? Mm-hmm. That was a gift from God, but there was something in it that was actually using this, the sin. It was like a distraction, like da 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 da. And then I see your real voice tucked back behind. This is what it looked like to me. This is Andy's real voice tucked back behind this.
Yeah.
Oh. Trying to hide this. This was trying to hide this right here. And here is her real voice.
Can you give an example?
I would hear you teach and I could see both things happening. The da 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 da. And then the real you, your voice. I don't mean like that's just all serious and doesn't have any fun. I don't mean that at all. But I'm like, it's hard because it's like I knew this so well. And I'm like, take that off. Like, what are you doing? We don't need that from you. It's not even real. Mm-hmm. Like, we need this, Andy. Like, take mm-hmm. this down. It was loud. It was impulsive.
It felt like self-centered.
It felt mm-hmm. like you had the ability to either this real voice had the ability to point people to God in ways that are remarkable, incredible. This right here that would dance in front of was pointed towards you.
Bingo. Well, and Melissa, like there is so much duplicity because of those reasons that I said early in life that to cope with life, I became different people, so to speak. But as far as the expression of God, that did not go away for a very long time. I didn't know how. I didn't even
Wait, what do you mean?
The dancey Andy versus the real became another aspect where I've got two MOs going on. Mm-hmm. I did. I had two MOs and I sometimes knew it, probably more often than I even realize it, because it wasn't lost on me. I just didn't know how to make these.
So when did you start to see the dancing Andy? We'll call her the dancing Andy.
Well,
is that okay?
Uh-huh.
So we've got the real Andy that I would call like leadership, influence, the ability to exhort others toward God, the real Andy. Then we've got the dancing Andy. When was the first significant telling the dancing Andy to take a seat? And she actually sat down and you felt the most fully yourself and alive using your voice. Do you remember that time?
Well, not specifically, but I do think when you called me out on Pride, which was the dancing woman with so many tentacles off of it to every single aspect of my life. And I don't mean a pride that simply exalts. I don't mean a pride that's like, I'm better than everybody mm-hmm. else. It wasn't. It was a pride that needed the spotlight to validate all of the junk. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, Melissa, I needed my brokenness, my wounds, my insecurities, and on that list goes, needed the dancing Andy because of it felt like validation to make people laugh, to be center stage, to it felt like I needed something from those that I led and taught. Versus now, I think God's done so much slow, Holy Toledo, slow transformative healing. You know how if you have two photos of you now and you as a baby, sometimes you're like, that doesn't even look like you. Like that can't be the same person because you don't look, there's no resemblance. I feel a little like that. Like maybe the jawline's a little the same, but there's not much resemblance. But I do remember in that time period where I got called out with Pride, which just exposed a whole lot of the MO that
this
I was
using. This would be
using.
Probably within 2 years of knowing one another. So this has been probably a decade ago.
Yep. I remember you saying something about my teaching, because we would critique and provide feedback for one another, of because we just wanted to be really effective. And we didn't have another person who would do this. So we're like, hey, here's what you could fix, or oh, this really worked. Melissa would do this always for me. I don't remember at all the specifics that you're bringing up about a tweak. And I think it wasn't just a tweak. I think it was like, where are you? Like, where are you in this talk? And that begged a different aspect of all of this, which was because I wasn't around many female teachers of the Bible. The only ones I was really exposed to were the superstars of our culture,
on
whom
video.
For sure I deeply love, respect, admire, trust, am so ridiculously grateful. But because I didn't have other normal models, I felt like, Melissa, that was what was expected of me, is to be Beth Moore's voice or to be Priscilla Shire's voice. So along with this duplicity and really not having an idea of who I really was, because it was all broken underneath the surface, I just became a Bible imposter teacher a little bit, trying to be like Melissa, trying to be like Beth Moore, trying to be like Priscilla, because I thought that's how it was supposed to go. And I did not at all trust the voice God had given me. I didn't know the voice that God had given me because I was living duplicitously.
So tell us where that began to change and how it began to change.
Well, one is with a friend and Uncle Dave who would say the real things that were not easy to hear. It's very vulnerable to use your voice no matter where or how it's used. That is for sure.
And then to get feedback on that voice.
Of two really loud, strong people who are going to be loving, but they're going to be direct. I don't think I probably would have ever broken from the duplicity and from the attempt to be like the other voices and sort of feel like that was the expectation on me, is to be like them, without you guys.
So you would say you needed to use your voice, right?
Yep.
That was one. You had to exercise it, which is always a painful experience.
Yep.
Even if you're falsifying half of your voice,
yep,
it's still painful, you know, to express. But then it was, you opened yourself up to community to speak into it, right?
Yep. Saying, tell me, because this is for the Lord. And it is, and it was. That was my MO at the end of the day, is I wanted to experience God. I wanted those women to experience God. That was never on the table as far as a question mark. But to submit and to listen and to try and feel like I'm falling on my face time and time and time again, those moments I think were like the slow, I feel like I pictured, you know, the big ice block and the little ice chipper that kind of creates finally an eagle. I don't know, an ice eagle or whatever, a sculpture. Those little chips, they hurt. Every single one of them hurt a little bit, because Melissa, if I knew what to do better, I would do it. It's because I didn't know. And I didn't know who I was. I did not want to know who I was. That was too painful. So for me, you and Uncle Dave and our other couple of friends who would speak into my voice, because they just wanted, they believed it too. Like, God's gifted you. We want the best. We want you to experience God. We want to experience God the best. So I trusted your motives, but I also listened and applied and listened and applied. And I think that really was the tool that God used to, and Melissa, I mean, slowly bring.
Yeah, it's true.
Slowly bring these two things to where they're not across the room anymore. I don't think that they're perfectly unified, but man, I don't think
they're,
it's
probably
that
just
far.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And they might sort of move
like
this.
I think that's
this.
Life.
Yeah.
I think that's just life. When they would have feedback, sometimes it did have to do with my character. Then I was realizing, crud, my character is impacting my voice. and my voice is impacting my character. And I saw it as this no longer two separate things that I can keep across the room. They were and ought to be one and the same. That was an eye opener where it freaked me out, because I remember a couple times where it got hard. The feedback got hard. I wasn't getting better. I felt like my character was actually getting worse as this stuff was surfacing and getting it into the light, and I saw it more for what it was and why I was behaving this way, my inability to stop behaving that way.
It's like the Andy started dancing louder. The dancing Andy, this would be my perspective, came out louder and more.
Oh, panic, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I remember a few specific times where I remember going, I don't know if this is worth it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this anymore. The fulfillment, spiritual fulfillment, even like community being fulfilling to me, even my own heart being fulfilled just by stepping out and using my voice and using my giftings. It was like, I don't know that this is worth it anymore. And I remember vocalizing this to a woman I was meeting with at the time, is I feel like I'm at a crossroad. I don't want to do this anymore, because I don't want to see who I really am. And this voice is 100% illuminating a person that I've worked my whole life to not see. And it's bringing it out. And that was terrifying.
So Andy had a season, and we'll fast forward here, a season where really your voice was quiet.
Oh yeah.
How many years was that? Maybe 2 years of really not using her voice. And I think that was fully intended by God. Mm-hmm. Painful.
Yeah.
Painful. But within that time, what I saw was God doing the work of saying, okay, dancing Andy, sit down. Like, just take a seat. And that is where I've seen the most growth in you. Mm-hmm. In our entire friendship has been in those 2 years. And now we're watching the fruit. This is my belief. Mm-hmm. We're watching right now the fruit of those two silent years be birthed. Yeah. It was right before our 40th birthday. We are like, I don't know, less than a month in
apart. Birthdays. She's older.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Older by a month. And it was before our 40th birthday. We went, do you remember this? We went with a couple of friends to a restaurant. And I remember, I think I told you after, that my sense from God, and I felt so, you were in such a dark place. She was still in this like silent.
It was horrible.
Really not in ministry, not using her voice. She was doing her PhD program at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And I had this sense, and it's like, I didn't want to say it because it felt like there's no way this was probably not true. Like, this is what it felt like. My sense was, and I did tell you, was I feel like your 40s are going to, your decade of the 40s are going to bear so much fruit. And it just felt like at that moment, though, like the branch was bare. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
And like, you had no... I mean, you were just in, like, remember, you didn't want to read the Bible.
Oh.
You, like, I mean, it was like nothing. Like, it just was so barren.
Dark night of the soul.
Dark night of the soul. But the sense was really deep, with a real lack of faith in my own perception. But to be like, no, just wait, Andy, it's coming. Like, there will be so much spiritual fruit birthed, and it's from these silent years. And I think that has been the case. I really do.
Yeah.
So can we, go ahead. You say whatever you
want. One thing is, earlier in this conversation, maybe 10 minutes ago, I said I needed validation to be seen, yeah, affirmation, laughter. Though I needed it, Melissa, my brokenness demanded that loud dancing Andy perform, because it breeded some affirmation, or it felt like, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Last week, doing a little bit of coaching, directing, mm-hmm. teaching, listening, casting vision for the team that I was with in Florida. You know what I kept saying, Melissa? to this team of 14 amazing, remarkable students. You guys, I don't need a thing from you. This is your week. I'm just here to help you see what God's doing. I don't need you to sound good when you pray. I don't need you to respond or not respond or share or not share. That's in your court. I don't need a thing from you. And for me personally, that's something that I notice is like, even saying it last week, I was going, oh, this didn't used to be true. This did not used to be true. And that's why it's a big deal. And that's why it kind of latched onto my heart. Another thing I kept saying is, even in my own spirit and mind, I get to just be me. That's it. There's
it's so
no
easy. To, it's not easy to be yourself. But if you can move into it, isn't
it's simple.
There,
there's a simplicity.
Simple. Thank you. It's not easy. No. But there's something so simple about just knowing you just have to show up as yourself.
That's it.
With no pressure.
That's it. Is I get to be fun and ridiculously goofy and silly.
It's true.
In a way, Melissa, where it was not the dancing Andy who needed center stage. It just was
you.
Me.
That is just you.
Just me being me. And oh, Melissa, I mentioned it was my favorite week of the year, maybe of the last several years, because of a couple things. I felt immense freedom to just be the person that God has made me to be, in a way that when I made up this stupid game in the parking lot and we spun a 76-year-old man, a woman in the parking lot, it felt like worship because I was no longer duplicitous or trying to stop being me because I hated who God made me
or
to be.
Or amping you up. Like it's either suppressing or amping.
Bingo. And I, to just be me and feel permission to just be me and then to not need, and I mean need in a way that's not normal and healthy. I need the body. I need encouragement. I need correction. Mm-hmm. But I mean a need where it fueled my wounds and it covered my wounds and was not of God. It's like, that's the voice that God's given me. And there's nothing that compares to using my voice and knowing God's in it, I think way more so than I realize.
Laughing right along and being like, oh, Andy, and your games, and taking such delight and pleasure as you just get to be yourself. And as we're just ourselves, it amazes me how much God moves. And we think, or I think, or you think, that it takes, like, we have to do all this performative stuff. And it's like, no, you just get to be you. And that is the most we have to offer God, is ourselves, our true selves. So one last question before we wrap up. I loved this question that you asked me. And you didn't ask me it before, so it was very impromptu, and I loved it. If you had to describe your voice that God has given you in a couple words, how would you describe it?
That's a hard question. Okay, two words pop into my mind. One is practice, and I need to explain that. And then the other is practical. So I would see it, I think like this, and I'm real curious your perspective. So I feel like a coach these days. And I love basketball, so let's just pretend this is basketball. And the coach, where does the coach stand, Melissa?
On the sidelines.
On the sidelines. And who's on the court?
The players.
I feel like my voice comes in the practice sessions because you're not always in full game mode in your uniform with the clock ticking. Actually, way more times you're on the court just practicing and dribbling and shooting and passing over and over, and you feel like you're not going to get better. I feel like my voice happens when you are practicing, and I get to be on the sideline saying, here's what it means. Here's why it matters. Let me remind you what's at stake if you win this game, or if you don't show up to practice, or if you don't dress in uniform. Like, here's what the point of this is. You want to be here. Remember, I know you hate practice, but remember, as soon as you walk in that door, you love it. and I'm going to help you love it more. And I'm going to work you a little bit and push and pull and like show that didn't work and here's why. But maybe if you just, and then here's the practical.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hold your hands like this and then go like this at the end of your free throw. You're going to see the ball spin. Keep trying it. Keep doing it. And so that's my description of my voice, maybe.
I think that's practice, a really...
Yeah. On the sidelines while you guys are doing the work of your calling.
Wait, I just had an epiphany. I can't tell you how much, friends, I think that is true of your voice. It's where I've benefited the most from you standing on the sidelines, shouting to me, being like, Melissa, no, like wrong
not
basket.
That way. Right.
I mean, I personally benefited from it. I've seen it. Can you realize what the enemy has done with your past and all that brokenness to create this dancing Andy? Would the dancing Andy ever be on the sidelines? Where did the dancing Andy want to be?
Oh,
the mascot in the middle of the causing a distraction?
Oh, wrecking the game.
And like, oh, what a ploy of the enemy to use the sin of other people, our own sin. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the sin in your sexual abuse, just to be the sin of other people, plus as we live life and are humans, our own sin. Take that and make it the complete opposite of what you have been created and designed to do. Although, here's what's sneaky and tricky. There are parts of you that are loud, that are leadership, attention, receiving, because everyone knows what the coach is saying. The coach can, even at the sidelines, can like create a whole orchestra, a plan, a strategy for the team to do it. Like it's like the choreographer, right? Do you see how subtle that is?
Yeah.
Where it's like taking your voice, your leadership, but instead of being a coach with a clipboard on the side, donning an outfit that's like a bird or an eagle or a whatever chipmunk, and parading around like in the middle. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
for sure. I know what you mean.
I can like so see it in my head and how God has been so kind to gradually.
Slow.
I mean, we all wish it was just so much faster,
yep.
But it's been so gradual to watch you taking off, you know, the mascot clothing.
Yeah.
And to find, and really, I think for a while to be kind of sad to be on the sidelines.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's just probably within
Absolutely.
The last couple of years watching you stand up on the side, like no longer sit down and just be like, man, this is not fair. Why am I not out there playing? And to stand up and be like, oh, okay, I see you. Okay, wait, I think I kind of see what can happen here. And watch, that's, it's been a really, really fun process to watch. Painful.
Yeah.
But now on this end, reaping the fruits of it.
Yeah.
So my friend, if you are in a spot, especially if you're in your 20s and 30s, don't you think there's so much as we move toward God? Our 40s, I just feel like are... Do you think they're fun?
Yes, I do, actually.
Like more like identity grounding.
Yes.
With a lot of work,
absolutely.
Though.
It's with
taken
a lot
of
work.
In community, God community, being open to receive, to have hard conversations after hard conversations, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
So we gotta wrap up. This is so long.
So it'd be real easy to, Melissa, listen to this and be like, I was just saying this morning. I don't have a place. I don't have a place to use my voice. But I felt like as I was literally sitting in that chair back there telling God, Lord, I feel you doing something in me and I don't have a place to. And I felt like the Holy Spirit being like, ask me, I will, it's right around you. And I was like, okay, then Lord, will you show me where do I use my voice? And then it was like a little bit of an avalanche. Now I will say, Melissa, it's not what I want. Mm-hmm. It's
usually not as
it's
exciting.
Not glorious.
Yeah.
It's not romantic or glorious, yeah. or very pretty. It's using my voice at a lunch with friends, using the way that God's wired me. And I mean, really not hesitating or not feeling like I ought to return to this with those folks, using my voice with you, using my voice with my kids, using my voice with my husband, using my voice with my next door neighbor, using my voice with my mom and dad-in-law and my dad, of like, I don't think the big moments are on stage mm-hmm. where our voice is formed. It's not, Melissa. Yeah. And if it is, scary. Oh. It won't last yeah. and you will take the ship down with you. Typically, the voice is demonstrated and practiced here.
Every day.
I know that sounds too fluffy or...
Or not very exciting, ordinary. Quite frankly.
I'm yeah. telling you, you learn to use your voice offline.
So friends, practice. Like I would be so happy if you left this conversation and not like practiced it for the next 20 years, but just went into another conversation with a friend, a spouse, a family member to practice using your voice.
And it's like, just share. What is God doing yeah. in you? Or what is he not doing in you? That is using your voice 100%.
All right, friends. We will see you next week. I'll be doing another Bible reset. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. Did you It'll watch the last one?
No.
Of course you didn't. Okay. We'll see ya.
Okay, bye guys.